from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. The Sundance Film Festival gets underway this week in Park City, Utah, and coming up this hour, we'll be joined by two documentary filmmakers whose work is being screened there. One is called Crime After Crime, and it tells the story of a battered woman convicted in 1983 of first-degree murder, and two Bay Area attorneys who work to set her free against overwhelming odds. The other, We Were Here, features the stories of San Franciscans who survived the AIDS epidemic that killed so many people, especially in the 1980s and 90s. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome to Forum. Michael Krasny is away this week, sitting in. Scott Schaefer. And this hour, we're joined by two documentary filmmakers whose work will be seen at the Sundance Film Festival in the coming week or so. First up is director Yoav Potash. His film, Crime After Crime, traces efforts by two Bay Area attorneys to free a battered woman. Her name is Deborah Piegler. She was convicted of first-degree murder in 1983 for killing a pimp who repeatedly beat and threatened her. Here's a short clip from the film, and the voices you'll hear are first Debbie Piegler and then one of her attorneys, whose name is Joshua Safran.
My name is Deborah Piegler, and I was convicted of first-degree murder, sentenced to 25 years to life.
We have bad news and we have good news.
Nadia Costa and I began representing Deborah Piegler shortly after California became the first state in the nation to adopt a law specifically designed to help incarcerated survivors of domestic violence win their freedom. It's a huge problem, a national problem, probably an international problem, and this law is just the first step. Debbie was connected to the murder of the man that abused her, but the evidence of that abuse was never presented to the court. And if she had been charged appropriately, she would have served a maximum of 6 years in prison. Instead, by the time we took her case, she had already been in for 20 years and been denied release by the parole board twice.
And again, that clip is from Crime After Crime. And joining us now, a director, Yoav Potash. Good morning. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Scott.
First of all, how did you find out about Debbie Piegler?
Well, Joshua Safran, the attorney who you just heard, is a friend of mine. So I heard about the case from him as he was working on it. But I didn't leap at making a documentary film right away. It sort of took a little time for me to hear more about the case and finally really to have the chance to meet Deborah Piegler face to face. And it was after that occurred, I was really hooked.
What was it about her and her story that really got you hooked? And I'm hearing your engineer there. I know you're in at a studio in New Mexico, so just be aware that we can hear whatever's going on that end. But did you hear the question? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. It's live radio, you know? It's okay.
I was a little distracted. Would you mind repeating it for me?
Sure. Yeah. What was it about Debbie Piegler and then her story that you found so compelling?
Well, I think for one, you know, the experience that she had been through, being abused, being coerced or forced into prostitution was, you know, was so harrowing, and at the same time, she was able to relate it to me with such authenticity and honesty, revealing, you know, the pain that she had been through, the regret, and the fact that she was willing to expose herself to that degree, to reveal everything she had been through. And then at the same time, so in a sense, that's what impressed me about her past or how she was able to relate her past. And then what impressed me in the present was the life she had made for herself while behind bars, because she was leading the gospel choir. She was earning college degrees from behind bars. She was teaching illiterate inmates to read and write, working a job inside the prison, and was really doing the most one could possibly do from behind bars to make the most of herself.
You know, there are a lot of people in prison who say they're innocent or who are, say they're unfairly treated by the system. What convinced you of that in her case?
I think hearing her story firsthand really convinced me. I mean, as I mentioned before, I didn't leap at this film right away. When Joshua began to tell me the story, what I gathered was, okay, here's a woman who was connected to a murder, and in this case, the murder of the man who had abused her. So right off the bat, I thought, okay, well, this is more complex than the cases we hear about where, for example, someone was absolutely wrongly convicted and DNA evidence can prove that they had nothing to do with it, that it's the wrong person. This is not that kind of case. This, it's similar in that there's a body of evidence that was never looked at that needed to be. And in this case, it's domestic violence evidence. It's everything that was happening to Deborah Pegler that led up to that crime. And that evidence was not looked at in court. And certainly any expert would agree that it mitigates her culpability. It makes her less guilty than the crime for which she was convicted, which was first-degree murder with a life sentence.
And we should say she was not present when the murder happened, but she brought this guy, his name is Oliver Wilson, to the scene where he was ultimately killed, right?
That is correct. That's correct. She brought him to a park. She had some knowledge that these two other men who were in some sense, protectors of her, that they were going to be there. And the moment these two men emerged, she left the scene. And it's really not entirely clear, you know, what she, if she even knew that they were going to kill him. I think she herself had to reflect on that and had a number of doubts about that. My own understanding of it is essentially that everyone, that these two guys and her own mother, who were all sort of involved in this quote-unquote plan, that all of them never said that they were going to kill Oliver because they knew – Oliver Wilson is the name of this, the man who had abused her and pimped her – that they never said that they would kill him because they knew that she wouldn't have – gone along with it. She wouldn't have brought him to the park if she knew that that was what was going to happen. And instead, they used phrases like, we'll make sure he never does this to you again. We'll make sure he leaves you alone.
Yeah.
And they sort of left it at that. And I think that's how she got into the situation where she was connected to a murder. And after the murder took place, the prosecutors in Los Angeles County chose to prosecute her pretty aggressively, and she was sentenced right alongside with one of the men who had actually strangled Oliver Wilson to death.
Well, I want to play another clip from this film, Crime After Crime, and this is Deborah Pegler talking a little bit about what this guy, Oliver Wilson, who she had a child with, we should say, although he was pimping her, he was also, I think, sort of a common law spouse with her. And this is a scene her describing where Deborah refuses to have sex with the men who he was trying to pimp her with and tells this to Oliver when he returns to pick her up. This is what ensues.
And when he came back to get me, he was like, well, how much money did you make? I was like, none. What do you mean, none? I said, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. No, I don't. And he said, oh, okay. Like nothing was wrong. Next thing I know, he hauled up and slapped the crap out of me. I just balled up on the floor in a ball. Never forget, he was just kicking me and kicking me and kicking me. And I was like, okay, I promise, I'll do it next time, I promise, just don't, please don't hit me no more, please just stop hitting me.
That is a clip from Crime After Crime, Debbie Pegler, who was in prison for killing her pimp. And I want to ask you about the title of this film, if I could, Yoav Potash, Crime After Crime, a play on the phrase time after time. But why did you come up with that name? What does it signify?
Well, it's referring to the idea that yes, in this case, a crime occurred, and in the cases of many victims of domestic violence, eventually a crime may occur where the victim is actually fighting back against the abuser. So that's the first crime. The second crime, the crime that occurs after the crime, is how our criminal justice system handles these cases. In Deborah Pegler's case, as I mentioned before, she was prosecuted very aggressively. In fact, the prosecutors threatened her with the death penalty. We were ready to use state funds to kill this woman unless she entered a plea, a guilty plea, and that's exactly what happened. Facing the death penalty, she entered a plea and instead got the slightly lighter sentence of life in prison. I don't really think that that's how most taxpayers want to see their dollars spent. And with the film, we're trying to call attention to the flaws in our justice system that have led to, I guess what you would say, the second type of crime in this case, the way these cases are prosecuted.
And this film is heart-wrenching in so many ways. The twists and turns that it takes. And, you know, this woman, Debbie Pegler, is about 50 years old now, and she was obviously had remorse, but she's also smart and very articulate, very compelling person. And her attorneys, Joshua Safran, who we heard from earlier, and Nadia Costa, on the surface, they really have nothing in common with her. You know, one is a Orthodox Jew. The other is a middle-class suburban white woman. And yet it turns out that they do share something very important with Debbie Pegler. Tell us about that.
Sure. Over time, I learned that both Joshua and Nadia, each in their own way, had been victims of domestic violence themselves. And I think that was what attracted them to volunteer for her case for so many years and to never give up. Because certainly, I think many attorneys who would have taken this case perhaps would have at some point just thrown in the towel because it was such an arduous journey. So for Joshua, it meant that when he was a child, he saw his mother really horribly abused time and time again. And only through, you know, good fortune were they able to escape alive. And so I think I know that he feels a very thin line separates him and especially his mother from Deborah Pegler. His mother could have ended up doing the exact same thing that Deborah did, or could have possibly been killed by her abuser. And then with Nadia, she also has admitted that she's had an experience, or perhaps I think more than one experience in her past, that where she was abused. She's not as open to discussing the details for, I think, obvious and very understandable reasons. But simply the fact that as a child and as a young adult, she experienced something indicates that she has a strong bond with Debbie. She understands what Debbie and her family have been through, and she certainly wanted to do everything within her power to bring Deborah back to her family.
This was a personal endeavor for both of them on some level.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they did not have to do this. The law firm that approved them to do this certainly underestimated the scope of work, as did Joshua and Nadia themselves. And I think perhaps for all parties, had they known how many years it was going to take and how much effort and heart and soul, you know, they may not have signed on in the beginning. But the fact is, once they were in, all the way. You kind of have to be. And I think on some level, the same was true for me. That day when I first met Deborah, you know, I walked into the prison with my camera thinking, okay, I'm going to film this woman. I'm going to find out who she is. I'm going to see if I sympathize with her story and by extension, if I think an audience would sympathize with her story. And I walked out of the prison that day, about 6 hours later, just saying to myself, wow, I'm making a film.
So you knew right then that this is a compelling story to tell.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yoav Potash is my guest. He's director of the film Crime After Crime, which tells the story of two Bay Area attorneys trying to get freedom for a battered woman who was convicted of first-degree murder in Los Angeles in the early 1980s. If you'd like to join our conversation for this half hour, you can give us a call at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Tell us also, there's in the film, the role of the district attorney, Steve Cooley, in Los Angeles. He was not the DA when this crime was prosecuted, but he is the DA now. He ran for attorney general and came within a hair's breadth of winning. His office comes up with a deal at some point during the film, which will help Debbie Pegler get out of prison, and then his office reneges. What did you get from that whole episode, and what did it tell you about the justice system? What did it tell you about Steve Cooley?
Well, unfortunately, it told me that our justice system is often subject to the whims of individuals who have concerns other than justice, even though that's, you know, their job description is to do their best to make justice happen. And you're right, in 2005, Los Angeles District Attorney Steve Cooley, after having reviewed all of the evidence that Nadia and Joshua prepared on behalf of Deborah Pegler, as well as after having reviewed all of the DA's own internal evidence that Nadia and Joshua were not privy to, the district attorney, Steve Cooley, you know, puts forward this deal in writing that essentially says, Deborah Pegler, we are going to help you get out of prison. And in a case like this, where the prosecutor is typically your opponent for your release, to have them on board, that's practically a golden ticket, whether you're going to get out through parole, or in Deborah's case, the plan was to just bring her habeas petition in front of a judge. And when both parties appear before a judge in agreement, the judge will typically just sign off on it. But before that could happen, Steve Cooley chose to withdraw from the agreement, which was certainly questionable whether he had legal grounds to even do so after putting a deal in writing. And then the reasons that emerged for why the deal was withdrawn, you know, appeared to be, honestly, in my opinion, I would say shallow.
Were they political reasons?
Well, perhaps political. I mean, there were concerns that Debbie could sue them for wrongful incarceration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was something they had neglected to. I guess maybe they had forgotten, in a sense, to ask, oh, yeah, will you waive claims against L.A. County when they offered this deal? And so then they tried to ask her to waive her claims after the fact, and her lawyers were not on board with that. And then beyond that, within the DA's office, certain people were not included in the signing of this deal. And they were upset, and one of them is Lael Rubin, and she's most known for the McMartin prosecution, which is about 20 years ago now, but it was at
child molestation case.
Yeah, it's a child molestation case, and it was the largest, most expensive, longest-running failed prosecution in U.S. history at that time. And so, you know, you have these people who were twisting and turning the fate of this case because either they felt they weren't included in some talks, or they felt that maybe the DA's office is going to get sued later, so let's prevent that. Let's just keep this woman in prison because she can't very easily sue us from prison. And it really had nothing to do with the substance of her case. And the substance of the case was what they had weighed in on when they initially wrote this letter saying, we're going to help you get out of prison.
And obviously that was a sort of a crushing moment in the film for both for the attorneys and for Debbie Pegler. I want to bring in now on the line is Joshua Safran, who is one of the attorneys. We heard a clip with him earlier in the show. And Joshua, welcome to the program. And I want to – Joshua, I think we have you here on the line, and we'll wait for – him to come. Oh, I have to. Okay, I'm sorry. I have to push a button. There we go. Joshua, welcome to the program.
Scott, thanks for having me.
You know, one of the most compelling parts of the film is, and there are many, but one is the relationship that develops between you and Debbie Pegler. And, you know, she is in the film. She talks about sort of, you know, being a little skeptical. Who are these two white attorneys and this one guy wearing a yarmulke? He's an Orthodox Jew. You know, what does he know about me? Talk about that relationship with her and how it developed.
Sure. Well, we made the biggest mistake that a criminal defense attorney can make in befriending your client, which you're not supposed to do, but we didn't know better. You know, Debbie was initially a little standoffish with me, I think mostly because I was a man. And here, you know, I'm coming to her and saying, disclose to us all of the most horrible things that have ever happened to you, you know, physically, sexually, you know, and that's going to be your ticket out of here. You know, start talking, go. You know, it was a little bit of a difficult thing for her to do, and she had to sort of gain our trust, or we had to gain her trust. And the only way that we could think of to do that was basically just to befriend her. So, you know, the first several meetings were basically just kind of getting to know each other. I had a history of kind of domestic violence in my childhood, so I kind of felt like I had to lay that out on the table to get her to understand where I was coming from. And, you know, once we'd built that rapport, she had enough comfort to begin talking, you know, and disclosing all of these sort of horrible facts.
And we should point out that neither you nor your co-counsel, Nadia Costa, were like public defenders or anything. You were land use attorneys, right?
That's right. We could get you zoned to be an airport if you want, but we couldn't get you out of prison. At least that's what we thought, although we sort of ended up doing it.
How did this being part of this whole project, and not just the film, but the actual case itself, how did it change the way you view the legal system?
Well, it was really dispiriting. I think I went into it with a little bit of healthy skepticism, but kind of a fundamental understanding that, you know, the system generally works. It might just take a while. And I feel like we got kind of sent down the rabbit hole of a crazy, you know, criminal justice, I don't know if you want to call it system or, you know, lack of system, in part, you know, sort of the LADA's office and all the shenanigans that they pulled, and just kind of a sense that a lot of the judges that we were sending things to don't even read the materials, and deals were being made in the, you know, cafeteria lunch line in the courthouse, and since we were a Northern California, you know, firm, we didn't have those opportunities, and it was just a lot of strange vouching, and it kind of, you know, I kind of walked away thinking, wow, you know, if you're an innocent person in prison, you have to have a team of big firm lawyers working on your case for 7 years to even get anyone to read your papers.
Yeah. And, you know, Potash, we're short here on time, about a half a minute left. But how did making this film change you, do you think, as a person?
Oh, well, it changed me a lot. I mean, I did not think much about domestic violence or people in prison prior to embarking on this whole journey. And now I consider myself an advocate for people who are in prison, especially people who are wrongfully incarcerated, and specifically victims of domestic violence who have not had the chance to present their evidence. So one of the things we're doing alongside the film now is launching what we're calling Debbie's Campaign, which is going to be a national nonprofit campaign to use Deborah's story to help create change in our criminal justice system.
All right.
Nationwide.
Yoav Potash, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but we are short on time. Again, director of the film Crime After Crime. It makes its first Sundance screening this weekend, January 23rd in Park City, Utah, and I highly recommend it. It's a very compelling film, and thanks to you for joining us this hour. Coming up in the next half hour, another documentary filmmaker, David Weissman, joins us to talk about his film, We Were Here. Coming up on Forum. Stay with us.